There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
And welcome to Why Do You Think You've Got No Friends? My name is Emily Lang. I'm an actress, writer, singer, codependent returnee from rock bottom and a gratefully recovering addict. And this is the podcast where we aim to rid the shame. The highs and lows and deadly blows that ultimately led us to the lessons that we never knew we needed to learn but are so grateful that we did. So, school is, can be, was definitely for me, a minefield. My guest today, Mae Stevens, is talking openly about her experience with bullying, body shaming, and being forced to come out. We are also discussing all things ADHD and music and healing. Her new single is out on the 29th of this month, so please visit the podcast bio where you will find all information. Okay, so it is 2018, and I always love to say, what a big year. What the... what was happening in 2018? You will be surprised by what Kettering's got going on. But we're at school and in this moment.
Yeah. Why do you think you've got no friends?
So I was at school for the majority of my life closeted because for me, I was bisexual in school, and then I transferred over and I was a lesbian for quite a while, and then I met my partner. It was like one man that changed it all. But that sounds really bad. But no, going back to school, I was bisexual. I was really confused. I wasn't sure what I liked, but I kept that quite closed. And there was this other person who was going through their period of time, you know, they were, I believe, non-binary, and they changed their name. And I was friends with this person for years before their transition. Like a really, really, really dear friend. Such a lovely person. And then one day I misnamed them. And I always apologize. Like I'm a very, sometimes I jumble my words or I forget something. And especially with like pronouns or names, I'm always like, I always try to accommodate, but sometimes my brain just, there's like a switch that doesn't work sometimes, and I always apologize. And anyway, I apologized to this person, and then they did not speak to me for so long. Like they completely shunned me out, and I felt so isolated. And the next thing I know, this rumor's going around the school that I'm homophobic. And so that really hit on another level. I was like, I don't really know what to do. And so I ended up having to come out to my friends and be like, look, I'm not homophobic, you know, I'm questioning myself. And it was such a weird thing because I expected coming out to be something of acceptance. And like, here it is. Like, and telling my parents was the scariest thing ever, but they were obviously amazing about it. But it was terrifying because I got forced to come out pretty much, and doing that as well, I remember sitting in science class, had two lads either side of me, two quite popular lads, right? Two sporty lads.
Ugh, I hate them.
Oh, no.
I hate them, but I love them so much.
And one of them turns to me and goes, are you greedy? And I was like, greedy in what sense? Because obviously in school as well, I was a bigger girl. So they could have meant my eating problems, like my eating habits. It's like, no. But what do you mean? They were like, are you greedy? You like them both. You really like them both, don't you? And then they kind of started to almost push. And at that point, I didn't know what to say. So I had to leave the class. I could not cope with them just pushing and pushing and pushing. And it took me, it took me so long to find peace with that. Yeah. And actually fall into my skin a little bit more, because usually when you come out, you're prepping for it. You know, you're going, I feel comfortable in my own skin, now I'm going to come out. I had to come out and then feel comfortable in my own skin, which was like, it's so hard to do it the other way around. But yeah, that was my, and then I lost, and then going back to it, I lost a lot of friends. Mm. Because the moment you tell your friends that are females, or I say my friends, that you like girls, they run away. They're like, oh, you must like me then. It's like, no, actually, I have standards.
Yeah, thank you. Honestly, it's that thing of being like, I'm fucking, come on, chill out.
Yeah, I lost quite a lot of my friends. Like, they just couldn't cope with the fact that was how it was. You know, I had a lot of mates that, you know, lived in different parts of the country as well. Like, friends you met on games, or and friends outside of school as well. And I lost quite a few just because they were like, oh, you must like me, then, oh, it's going to be weird. And it did become quite awkward for a while, because, you know, you get changed with them, you get ready with them, like, they're your girls, they do everything for you. And then it's just that when that piece of information comes in and that little sprinkling of awkwardness comes in, it completely sets a friendship in the wrong direction.
Man, I mean, like, ego just flies through the fucking roof of going like, sorry, your coming out must be about me and your attraction to me. It's typical. Like, but that... It's your hand being forced in that situation of either going, I'm sorry, I either have to be homophobic or I have to come out.
Yeah.
And not being given a choice or any kind of like grey area, middle ground or time and space. Fucking hell.
It's just kids, isn't it, though? It's kids. Like, kids are horrible. And that sounds really bad. I say the kids I went to school with, some of them were so mean, in the sense of like they had no filter.
Yeah,
like, because a lot of kids don't have a filter, do they? It's like, this comes out, I did not realize what I said was bad, but it's come out anyway. It was the worst period of time in my life. Like, don't get me wrong, the school that I went to, like, they were always accommodating to me, they always made sure I was all right.
Yeah,
but it was just cruel kids. It was too specifically, I will happily give this piece of information to everyone, there were two girls that made my life a living hell. And they were sisters. And they absolutely, like, I had body dysmorphia. I was depressed. I had severe anxiety. Like, I was so scared of leaving the house, or so scared of walking home from school, that I'd catch them. They pushed me downstairs. They ripped my bag open. They filled my shoes with water when I was in PE. One of them cut my hair in a class. I had a bit of hair hanging down in the back. She was sat behind me in science. So I had a lovely chunk of hair. I didn't put my hair up for a while. There was loads. And, like, I don't condone bullying whatsoever, but I feel like I'm so mentally headstrong now, because I had to endure so much in that time period.
Yeah.
Like, even now, my ankles, knees and hips are out of alignment from being pushed down three flights of stairs. Because with the stairs as well is... when it's rained, because when it's rained, it's obviously really slippy. It's one of those staircases that goes like that.
Yeah.
So you fall, you slide, you're down.
Whoa.
Was
there any kind of comeuppance for those girls?
One of them...
other than right now?
Well, I mean, success is the best karma. For me, I don't really know what happened to them. One of them wasn't in the school anymore, and the other one I've never heard anything of, apart from, oh, I'll tell you a little bit of tea. So my partner now, very pretty looking lad, he's Spanish, he's a beautiful human to me. And he did barbering in college, right? Uh-huh. Excellent barber. But one of the girls was in his class, and she tried to hit on him a little bit, and she liked him. One day she started talking about me. There was a rumour going around. I can happily explain this. Mm. There was a rumour. It was me, my friend, and these two lads. One of them was my friend's friend, and the other one was just some very awkward lad. Mm. We're all sat there on her bed watching Do You End of the Fucking World?
Oh, yeah.
That show.
I think I auditioned for that back in the day.
Really?
Mm.
Good show. It's a cracking show. So good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
Seriously?
Yeah. 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 Yes.
We sat there. There was nothing about it. It was literally four people sat on the bed watching TV.
Yeah.
Cannot make this crap up. But a year later, she dates this guy.
Right.
No recollection. I couldn't remember this guy's face if you asked me to. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
She dates this guy. And then she goes around and says to everyone that apparently I slept with him. Right? Bear in mind, I'm like 15, 16 years old at this point.
What?
I have, okay, boyfriends to me don't really exist, right? All I'm thinking about is food and getting through school. That's basically my tandem of thoughts. But yeah, she told the entire school that I'd slept with him. And then she started mentioning this when Adam was stood in the room with her and Barbara. And he was like, yeah, she slept with my boyfriend, da da da. And Adam turned around and he called her out on it, right? Bear in mind, her and her friend used to like eye him up and follow him around and stuff like that.
Mm.
And he called her out and she was like, oh, I can't remember what she said. But he turned around and went, no, you're being a bitch. How dare you talk about my girlfriend like that? And then she never came into college. She didn't come to class again. I don't think she could face the fact that he stood up for me and she wasn't going to get him. Or there was a lot of girls that tried it on with my partner and he was just like, no, no, thank you.
No.
I only have eyes for you.
No.
Yeah, so many. Because he's such a pretty boy. And yeah. he doesn't realise it, but he's a very, very good looking lad.
Mm.
And so there were always going to be girls that tried it on. Some of the girls I went to school with tried it on. There was a girl I'd known for so many years and she tried it on. Like, and to be honest, I'm an Aries. I'm a fire sign. You know, I'm a bit fiery. So for me to have to stand there while some girl is talking to them, and he's like, no, no, you have to withhold yourself.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hold yourself back. But yeah, those two made my life a living hell. And that was just, I'm so strong for it now. Like, I don't take anything now because why should I? I was pushed over for so many years.
Mm.
But yeah, I don't know where they are now. I quite frankly could not care. I've had people from school who bullied the crap out of me reach out to me and go, so proud of you, like, well done, all of that. And I'm never horrible back. Yeah. I always say like, thank you very much or something like that.
Yeah.
Because why would I bring myself down to them, their level?
It's just like, it's literally kind of like placing that boundary in place of going, there's absolutely no reason, also not to sink to the level of being cruel in return. Yeah. I never ever believe in being directly cruel to anybody. Just like, but just going, cool, thanks. We're not going to connect over this.
Exactly.
Like, hello, look who's joined the chat.
Hey.
Michael's here, everybody.
Oh.
I think only his bum is directly to camera. And the foot is tailed up.
Enjoy the show. Hello, my dear. Ask Adam off. Sorry.
It is funny, like, I've been away from school for so long that it's like this weird sort of like hazy Oz memory.
Even for me now as well. I don't remember half the stuff that happened at school.
Which is probably a sign of how fucking awful it was.
It's something you block out from. I think everyone does it though. Everyone blocks school out from their memory because you're in the, like, I don't know if you, did you guys have a uniform?
Yeah.
We had the same, you're in the same uniform for like several years. There is no, I've been blessed, sorry. But there's no independence. Like there's no creativity. You wear the same uniform. Everyone has the same hair. You're not allowed to do this. And, oh, hello.
I'm Mickey.
And that was so difficult because there was no expression in school.
Yeah.
So you kind of block it out from your memory.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I definitely did.
I can't believe what happened when they pushed you down the stairs.
Right.
In that moment, did anyone come to your aid?
I don't remember it very well. I remember there being a couple people around, but then again, nobody did anything. Because if they, I think it's like a rule in school, isn't it? You get involved, you're involved.
Yeah,
like It's the reason why, I never told my parents. I didn't tell my parents until I left school. And neither, like my brother was the same. Not because we were scared of them or anything, or because we were worried they were going to do anything. Do I taste good? Is it nice? It's licking my hand. Oh. Not because we were worried about telling them or anything, because we knew if we told them, they'd go down to the school.
Yeah.
They'd obviously do the right thing and go tell the teachers. However, that would make our life 10 times harder. Like, people would find out, the school would get called, the parents would get called, the kids would be 10 times worse, and everyone would call you a telltale.
Yeah.
Everyone would be like, you're a snitch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there was never that option to tell my parents.
It's not worth the admin. It's not worth fucking admin in that situation.
It's not. But there were so many things. There was a group of them as well. It wasn't just the two girls. It was a group of girls. They had their little tween of followers. And I remember the worst feeling was coming back in from PE. Bear in mind, you know when you're a kid and your mum buys you trainers, she'll buy you like bright, colourful trainers because you're a kid. And my mum did that, except I was in year 10. So of course I wanted a pair of white Air Force. I wanted some black trainers or something that wasn't bright neon colour.
Yeah.
She says.
She lied.
Full circle moment. But, you're on me. You're on me, Mike. Hang on. But Yeah, so I had these neon blue pair of Nikes that we got from Sports Direct. You know, the ones where mum's like, you need some running trainers. Yeah, yeah, you don't need fashion trainers.
Yeah.
So got me with these pair of running
trainers. No one's looking, no one's looking.
Yeah, no one's seeing
it.
You can have Velcro, it's fine.
I want the ones that light up at the bottom when I run.
Lally Kelly. Nobody wanted the shoes. We all wanted the makeup. Nobody gave a crap about the shoes. They were ugly. We just wanted the makeup that did absolutely sweep. Cool. Okay. The eyeshadow didn't do nothing. It was plastic. But yeah, I had these trainers and my school shoes, like I was quite proud of them. I'd had the same style of school shoes three times because yeah. They were comfortable. They didn't give me blisters. I didn't care what anyone thought about those. It was more than just the trainers.
Mm.
Come back in. They are filled to the brim with water.
I can't
right?
believe it.
So then they knew that I had those trainers and they knew that I was anxious and I didn't want to wear them because nobody wants to stand out in school.
Mm.
And so they filled my shoes with water. I then had to walk around the school in these trainers. And it was literally, it was like a big sign saying, look at me, look at my shoes. And I just remember being so embarrassed and just asking the school and be like, please send me home. Please send me home to get changed. I'll just put some white trainers on. I'll put some Vans on. I don't care. I just don't want to wear these.
Yeah.
And it was nothing. It was like, no, you got to stay in class. And my shoes didn't dry out for like 2 days.
Oh my fucking God. That's why it's so calculated, because that was premeditated.
Oh God, yeah.
Murder. That's, yeah. Tell you what though, like we said, we don't know what they're up to. They 100% know what you're doing. And that is some sweet victory.
Do you know what? The thing is as well, is I'm not afraid to talk about, I won't name them because I'm not that kind of person. I'm not the kind of person to go, it was this person, they did it. Here's their name, here's their address, here's everything about them. But I will happily talk about it because I'm sure they know who they are.
Yeah.
And they definitely know who they are. And I'm sure they know what they did was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because you gave a little girl body dysmorphia, depression, anxiety, scared to come into school. I was scared to be myself and my God, I was scared to come out. You made a little girl so scared to be herself that she literally pushed herself away from everyone else and enclosed herself in a capsule. And I hope you feel really, really proud of that. But yes, I am the where I am now, but it wasn't because of you.
No.
In fact, I had to spend several years building myself back up mentally, and my boyfriend was a massive help in that. If you go through bullying, I can promise you, the moment you leave school, it gets so much better. You go to college, you find your people, you find your style.
Yeah.
College was the best thing because I found it was that process of time where I went through so many fashion styles. I'm not going to lie. I had blue hair and all black for a while. Then I went pink, had those little dresses, you know.
Yeah.
Then I went back to the inner stage. I feel like college is that period of time where you figure out who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, gets better after school, don't worry.
When you came out to your parents, they were really supportive.
Mm.
And was your brother as well? Was it? Yeah.
So the only reason that I actually got through school, because obviously I got really depressed in like year 10 and year 11. Like I spent the majority of my time not in classes, but sat in isolation because I just did not want to be around everyone else. Otherwise, I'd start panicking. Mm. My brother was the person that, because I couldn't tell my parents, my brother had been to the same school. So I used to sit down with him and tell him everything.
Wow.
I found out when I left school, there was one kid in my form that was really, really mean. I found out my brother went into the school and spoke to my form tutor without even telling me, and the kid stopped bothering me, and I never knew why until
really?
I left school. My brother was the biggest support. Like, he was my entire rock, and he still is. We've never really had a fight. We've never been in a scrap. Like, he is one of my best mates. Mm. He got me through it. But yeah, when I came out to my parents, like, it was specifically, I think it was just my mum first.
Mm.
She just looked at me and went, whatever you are, we love you. You know, we're never gonna shun you for something you can't control and also something you are.
Yeah.
And they were so nice about it. They said, look, we always had a little bit of suspicion that maybe one of you would come out.
Mm.
But yeah, they were so good about it. It was like an immediate, okay,
yeah,
that's done with. I told my brother, completely fine.
Yeah.
I was so lucky that I had that support ring.
We had an actress come on the podcast, Elliot Salt, who's amazing, and she discussed when she realised that she was gay, and she was like, the thing that frightened her the most, well, not frightened her, but she said it was this thing of going, oh God, because she was like, the paperwork that I'm going to have to do here, I have to tell my parents. And was the thing about, like, again, it was like the admin of the entire thing.
Yeah.
When you have your parents who turn around and go, that's cool. You don't need to fill out a form. Like, you don't need to register. It's okay, we got it.
Yeah.
Fucking amazing.
Oh, that's so good. Mm. I don't know if I remember the, when did I know I sort of was thinking about girls? Ah, yeah, I do know. my celebrity crush is Florence Pugh. I've never loved a woman like I love Florence Pugh. But as well as that, there was a girl I went to school with, and she was really, really pretty. And I won't, once again, won't name.
but you know who you are.
But actually, to be honest, it was more like, because at school I didn't really speak to anyone, you know, I floated between groups, and when the group decided to reject me out, it was like, great, okay, I'll go into isolation, or I'll try and find somewhere that'll accept me. Because the group of friends that I originally hung out with, the only way I can describe this is I was the friend that walked on the grass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep, like, yep. Oh my God, that's so good.
So passive aggressive. Like one day they were super nice. One day it was like, hey, come and sit with us. Like, let's tell you all the beef. Let's tell you all this. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
And then the next minute it was like, cold. You are nothing to us. We don't want anything to do with you. You are our punching bag for the day.
Yeah.
And that was how it went. And it was kind of, so I didn't really have a specific friendship group. So I was kind of one of those people that was seen from a distance.
It's when you exist on the periphery. I think it takes a very long time to gather a sense of self, because it's that feeling of like people not caring if you're there or if you're not.
And I felt like a side character.
Yeah, literally.
So I didn't feel like I had a hold of my own story. I felt like I was a side character and everyone else.
Yeah, 100%.
And maybe that was preempting. I don't know. But so I know I floated between a group, but yeah, this girl, I thought she was so beautiful. And I was like, I was trying to figure out whether it was a girl on girl, like thinking she's pretty, like, oh, you know, you look beautiful. Or whether it was, you're really pretty. I think I'm attracted to you. And that was like the most confusing point in my life. And then when I got to college, like I met one of my best mates now. She's amazing. Her name's Ella. She's complete polar opposite to me. She's like all black, a bit grungy, you know.
Love it.
And I fell in love with her the moment I met her.
Really?
Like I fell head over heels in love with this girl. Unbelievably. And then we became friends. And now she is literally like the closest person to me. She knows everything. I'm not in love with her anymore. However, we have that, you know how men have that, like that little, oh yeah, I'll fuck that. You know, that kind of me and Ella have, you know, she'll smack my ass, or she'll come up and she'll, I'm not joking. She's done this in public. Yeah. Right. And bear in mind, I have to keep reminding her and saying, look, I'm an artist. Okay. You can't do this in public. We're in town a few weeks ago. She comes up to me, she grabs my boob, she goes, "Honk." In the middle of a store. I'm like, Ella, you can't do that. We're in her town, walking through Sainsbury's, grabbing loads of snacks. She comes up and goes, "Rah." She's like, Ella, you can't do that. You can't. She was like, why not? And I was like, because can you imagine article goes like, oh, girl gropes me. It's like, no, that's my friend. I promise she's fine.
Like photo in the Daily Mail, her being like,
she'd love it. She'd love it.
Attacked.
Ella, we love you.
Love you. When did you start? Well, when did you realize that you could sing?
Oh, I mean, I could start with there were videos of me that my dad took when I was around 4 years old singing like Twinkle Twinkle Little Star and stuff like that. My parents always said to me that if they'd always assume I was ill if I wasn't talking, singing, tapping, humming or anything like that. Like they always assumed maybe she was ill if she wasn't singing.
Right.
When did I know I could sing? I mean, I had a vocal coach from, I believe, 9 or 10. From then, I went into classical and like, do you know Steadfords?
No.
They're like professional singing competitions for anywhere from like kids to adults, but they're proper professional with like invigilators and loads of stuff. And I did loads of those going up against like a bunch of posh girls in their posh uniforms. And then I show up in my tramper uniform with a stain down my front, like, it's ready to go. Let's go. All right, I'm ready. But yeah, I was like going up against these private school girls. And so I had a lot of discipline singing when I was a kid. You know, I got pretty much whipped into shape. I did theatre for a couple of years. But I think the moment they knew I could sing was when I started to sort of delve into those competitions and sort of when I started to realize, okay, she's getting better now. Okay, she's getting better. Brilliant. And then the moment we knew I wanted to be a musician, I wanted to be an artist, was the day I wrote my first song. I had like a little purple kid's guitar, you know, the kind of one with the plastic strings that your mum gets you for Christmas. Got that for my 9th.
Nice.
From then, I wrote a song about a mother wolf and her cubs. It's called Wolf in the Night. And I came downstairs, took my little guitar and my 2 scrappy pieces of paper that I'd written the lyrics on with a felt tip. brought it downstairs, played the song, and my dad stood there and he said, I think we finally found what you're good at. And this was after so many after school clubs, so many ways to try and release energy. And my parents knew. They were like, you've definitely got something, like ADHD or that. But he said, I think we finally found what you're good at. And funnily enough, I have that tattooed on my arm in his handwriting. I'll show you.
Oh, this is because I'm so fucking emotional at the moment and I don't know why this is going to make me cry.
That's my dad's handwriting. When I got that tattoo done, I had to go into the toilet, cry and compose myself because I just could not. It's words that have shaped my entire personality and altered my brain chemistry. Because when he said that, the relief that I had, because I thought that I was going to go through my life and not be good at anything. Because I was never good at English. I was never good at maths. I was never good at anything.
You're not good at the things everyone goes, you're supposed to be good at these things. And if you're not good at these things, then...
I got told by the majority of my teachers I was going to fail my GCSEs. I passed all of them except history.
And who's sorry, no, I actually that.
Really, really loved my history teacher. She was the most amazing human being ever. She literally like introduced... learning information through lyrics because I couldn't intake information to save my life. It was like straight out. Yeah. So that she taught me that. She was an amazing person, but I got told I wasn't going to pass anything and that I wasn't good at anything. So the relief that I heard when my dad said, I think we finally found something that you're good at, was life-changing. It altered my entire brain because I was like, oh my God, I actually have something that I can do. I have something, pretty much something to live for, something to actually enjoy. And that was my something driving force.
That's really, really moving and wonderful.
Thank you. Do you know, the day I got signed was the one thing that we'd wanted to do. Like I've been doing this for 9 years. You know, I did every crappy gig, every pub where no one was listening. You know, I had someone coked up come up to me and go, sing something else. Like I've had every crap gig. And so 9 years of like blood, sweat and tears, arguments, the lot.
Yeah.
The day we sat down in EMI and I went to sign that contract, I had to hand my dad a cupcake because both of us were sat there. The moment he looked me in the eye, I could not stop crying. Because when you, like, it is when you work for something for so long and you go through so much, and especially when you go through it with your dad.
Yeah.
Like, he's my best friend. I could not be more thankful to have parents that I do. They're just incredible. So much respect for him. He went from knowing absolutely nothing about the industry. He's a network engineer.
Yeah.
He spent every waking moment, every break, every late evening, every morning learning everything he could about analytics, social media, everything. He learned how to work a camera. He learned how to edit and cut videos together and audio. Like, he is a phenomenal human being. And to sit there opposite him while we achieved the one thing we'd strived for so many years, it is a core memory. Like, I can't even explain it.
He marked it with a cupcake.
We did, yeah. We both had a cupcake because we were like, stop yourself from crying. You're in a room full of people.
Are we allowed to say his name?
Yeah, his name is Steve.
Steve.
Good old Steve. I can't explain how much respect I have for my parents and how lucky I am to have them. Like, because, you know, I could have turned around to my parents and gone, I want to be like, parents are like, oh, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a vet. I want to be this. But I turned around and went, I want to be a musician. And as far as anyone else concerned, it is one of the hardest industries to get into.
Oh my God, awful. Everyone goes, what?
My parents could have gone, no, you're going to do something academic. But they went, if that's what you want to do, then let's do it.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I want to talk a little, when did you get diagnosed with ADHD?
So, oh God, this is a process and a half. So my parents have always known I've had something. They've always, always, always known. We've always said like, oh, I had the hyperactive disorder and my brother had the attention deficit.
Right. Has run at each other really hard as I make it up.
It always said that I had all the Duracell batteries and he had none.
Nice.
But I went through school realizing that I learned a bit differently. I could never learn from a board, a pen and writing. I was always an immersive learner. I learned with colour, shapes, numbers. And it's quite hard to accept that when you're in school, because you're like, why am I not intaking this information like everyone else?
Yeah.
Why am I not moving as fast as everyone else? And so that was always a big worry in my head. And then when I got to college, and obviously I grew up in a time period, and as sad as it is, that time period wasn't even that long ago.
No. Okay?
But it was a time period where ADHD didn't exist. OCD didn't exist. It was, you are either a little bit bonkers or you're not.
Yeah.
And to be honest, like, trying to talk about it to people and explain it as it was coming up, it wasn't until ADHD became an established, it's not a disorder, but I have to apparently say the word, it's a disorder, but it's not, a superpower.
It is a superpower.
It is indeed. That was when it kind of went, okay, maybe it might be that.
Mm.
So a couple of years ago down the line, I've always assumed something was there, you know. Like I never self-diagnosed, but I always went, maybe I have it.
Yeah.
And then when I got signed and stuff, I got therapy because being an artist, it's hard, okay? Mm-hmm. You need therapy. You need someone to release stuff to, because otherwise you get really pent up. So I took my therapy sessions and I was talking to my therapist about it, and I was like, look, you know, I really, really think that this is what's going on. So my amazing label, they helped me go through the process diagnosis. I'm coming towards the end of that process at the minute. You know, so it is a long process about getting diagnosed. It
takes a long time.
It is a while. It doesn't matter whether you go private or you go normal NHS healthcare. It is a long time because there's such a backlog for people. Like, there are plenty of people I know that are still going through diagnosis, and they've been in diagnosis for like 18 months.
Yeah.
But I'm still going through that process, but the mental journey that you go on, I can't quite explain it. My partner's also going through his diagnosis, as well as a couple of others. And it's so hard because you learn so much stuff about yourself. Like, I learned that if I need to get something done, I need body doubling. So I need my boyfriend to be in the room, or like certain fabrics I can't touch and stuff like that, that you don't even clock is not normal, but when you start to read up on ADHD and you go, oh my God, I can't touch crushed velvet.
Yeah.
I really can't. It's something about it. And once you start reading, you start realizing, like, oh great, brilliant. And so as I discovered more and more about ADHD and learned more and more about myself, it was such, I got really depressed and I got really down because I was like, why of all people did it have to be me? Like, why am I like this? And I didn't quite understand until I realized that ADHD is not a disorder. It's just a superpower. Yes, we may get distracted a little bit. And yes, if you're wearing a funky shirt, we're not focusing on your face. We're looking at the patterns on your shirt.
Yep.
However, my God, the bloody creatives are incredible. I feel like everyone who has ADHD just has something, some spark of bloody magic.
Oh, because my God, yeah.
You think of them. We think of the most amazing things. And I'm so glad that, yes, I had to go through that hard process, but I'm starting to figure myself out as a human and understand why I do those things, because I've always questioned why I did things the way I did.
And I've found huge relief in it at the end of it, of going,
oh,
it's why do I learn something like that, learn it so quickly, get really fucking good at it, and then go... and go on to something else.
Oh, God, it's hyperfixation, isn't it? It sucks. My hyperfixation is matcha at the minute. I have one of those.
I love it. It's always fucking it's something, whether it's like a big water bottle that has the like number, so you drink that during the day, and it lasts for like 10 days.
Stanley.
Like, yeah.
I bought myself a Stanley. It has helped me drink a lot of water, but my God, it's like carrying around a bloody beer barrel, isn't
it? It's like having a weapon.
You hit something.
You can take someone out with it. Just because for so long it was this thing of like, there's just something wrong with me. I'm just shit. I'm shit, and I can't stick to things. Or why? Oh my God! I have the chili powder. I was making tomato mascarpone sauce, and I had the chili powder, and I put it down. This was a week ago. I've only just found it.
Yep.
And then I was thinking about it last night. I was brushing my teeth. And the idea of just standing and brushing my teeth for 2 minutes was too much. So I had to refill the water filter at the same time and do shit. And it's only now, like, understanding that ADHD and like neurodivergent, that like I go, oh, okay, it's fine. It's just fine.
It's just the way we work.
It's all right. I know that's to the outside world. It looks nuts,
doesn't it? I mean, I've just gone through the process of like, I've got a house now, you know. I moved into my house with my partner in May. And at first it's like, yes, you've got a house. Brilliant. Yeah. Amazing. Like, this is my own space. And then you go, shit, I've got a house.
Yeah, that's
exactly it.
I've got
to clean this house. I've got to keep this house organized.
This experience that you had at mm-hmm. school, what I like to do is kind of like circle back around to this thing of how that has informed you as a person.
Okay.
Because with these things that I talk about in the moment, my why do you think you've got no friends moment, when that happened to me in the moment, oh my god, it was
that's such a vile thing to say.
So vile.
That it's not just vile in the sense of, yes, it's a vile thing to say, but it's also one of them things that makes you think so deeply about it, and then you get into a spiral of, oh my god, why?
Yeah,
I can, that is such, I can't believe and you told me that.
Yeah, why do you think you got no friends, you useless twat? Which was going to be the entire
title. You're the useless one.
You're the useless twat. It was going to be the entire title of this podcast. And Jamie Lang, podcaster, my elder brother, we know him, got married this year. He was like, I think you should take out the useless twat bit because it's too long. And also, bit rude. I was like, yeah, fair enough. So it became, why do you think you've got no friends? But when that happened to me, like the pain of it, that I can't put into words what that was like and what the time that sort of fell out after that. But it is one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me, because had that not happened, I don't know if I would still be alive. There's what was said to me when I went to recovery in rehab. But now I go like, fuck, I'm great. Fuck. Thank you. You know who you are.
I mean, you've got a lot, like the amount of people that come on the podcast,
they all know.
And we all don't like you.
And do you know what? I don't say your name on here, but I say it when the fucking microphone's off.
Oh yeah. I know your name. That's the thing, isn't it? You got so many people coming on.
She's building an army. That's what she's doing. She's building an army.
We're coming for you. We're all coming for you.
It's horrible, because it's sad that it's such a horrible thing that's turned into a good thing. I mean, the amount of times I got told to kill myself at school, the amount of times I got told, you're too fat. Like, I had a kid at the same time every day. I walked in the gate, same time every day, told me, he said, no, just go kill yourself. Like, just please.
Shitting out.
Like, the amount of people that went, for example, I've got stretch marks everywhere. Mm. Something that I used to be so petrified of showing. I did not wear a dress. Mm. I wore jeans every single day, long sleeve t-shirt. Mm. It's taken me a while to get over that. Mm. But they were deemed as ugly, right? So every time I'd get changed either in the toilets or I'd get changed real quick. Mm. And there was always these couple of people, you're too fat, you're too this, like you shouldn't be. And there was a point where I stopped eating and I couldn't bear the thought, like eating made me feel sick.
Yeah.
And it's never something I told my parents. Like when I was sat down at dinner, I'd always piss around with my food for about 20 minutes and then get a couple of bites in and I go, no, I can't do it.
Yeah.
But those words are so prominent in my life, in the sense of, I am body confident now. And my goal is to make all those kids that are getting told that they're too big, they're too skinny. Mm. Oh, that's not normal. That's not right. One boob's bigger than the other. Who gives a flying?
Who gives a shit?
Okay. The reason I started to feel confident about myself was because I finally found someone who accepts me for who I am.
Yeah.
But those words were so prominent in my life that I had to sit down and go, I need to sort myself out mentally. I need to start to love myself. Mm. And it's a hard thing to do, isn't it?
It's a hard thing to do. I think we're talking like about how this experience, how that experience informed you and how you were treated informed you, because I think sometimes people go one of two ways. The trauma, it goes upwards and it's all like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. No, 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 no. Mm. Or it kind of overwhelms you and comes over like a wave, but then it passes. And I think one of the things it can give you is a deep, deep level of empathy. A deep level of understanding, and I think it sort of shows up in the way that if someone reaches out to you being like, so proud of you, and you're like, I'm not gonna I'm going to set this boundary by not connecting with you, but I'm also not going to be a fucking dick and be cruel in return. Because when you have faced cruelty like that,
you do not want to give it to anyone else.
You don't want to hand that on to anybody else.
I mean, do you know what? I will happily admit, and I'll say this and I'll be completely honest and open. There are things I did as a kid. And do you know what? When you're a kid and you're in a group of people, you're so heavily influenced.
Oh my God, yeah.
The amount there has been times I've said some things I completely regret, and I've acted in a way that I regret. And that's sadly the influence that people had on me. And I thought that was a good thing. Like, there were some things you think as a kid, and then you go back as an adult and you're like, oh my God, no. And I will happily accept and say that those things were wrong.
Yeah.
And for me, I don't think it's about the person you were. I think it's about the person you strive to become.
Exactly.
I will always think about those things. Yeah. Those things will never leave my head. And it's sad, because you do something, you're never going to forget that you did that. But as long as you strive to be a better person,
yeah,
then in my eyes, I feel like those things become quite cleared.
It's
you never forget them, but
yeah,
I feel like the person you try to become and the person you move yourself to be is the person that is there.
Yeah.
But the whole thing with school, it is a sense of empathy. I walked into the school because I did a concert for them a couple of months ago, and there was one girl, and I'm not kidding, she looked exactly the way I did when I was a kid. That it's like this gauntless look, this numb sort of non-emotional stare. And I know that look immediately because that's how I look the majority of my teen years, how I look the majority of my chadult stage and tweenage years. It's such a horrible thing. And I went to speak to her and I sat down with her and she was like, oh, you know, I want to be a musician one day. And I said to her, I said, look, I came from a small town. I came from getting bullied. You know, my parents weren't millionaires. They weren't pumped with money. You know, my mum worked for the police. My dad worked as an electrical engineer. We came, like, they came out of the army with nothing. You know, they worked their way up. I said to her, if I can make it, believe me, you can give it everything you've got and you can get there.
Yeah.
I said to her, for me, it's, you know, it's not about the money. It's about how hard you work and if you want to get to the position you want to get to. I'm not in it for the money. I couldn't care about how much money comes with this. What I care about is helping people.
Yeah.
I care about being that person that shows those kids that I got bullied. I got told every day that I was never going to amount to anything. I got told by teachers I wasn't going to do anything in my life. I got told that I was never going to make it as an artist. I was never going to make it anywhere. I got told by some rich kid one day I was always going to be poor. I was always going to be this. And I worked hard. And if you work hard and you're passionate about something, you can get there. I'm just there to help people and show the kids that you can do anything you want if you put your mind to it.
Yeah.
And as cringy as that sounds, it's so bloody true.
Yeah, no, it is.
I was striving for I'll say this. I was striving for something I thought was literally on the verge of impossible.
Yeah.
Because to come from a small town with, yes, a great music scene, but obviously not as much as like living in Birmingham or Manchester. Coming from that, and also coming from a place where we didn't have like loads of cash to splash on like demos and stuff like that, I thought it was going to be impossible.
Yeah.
And so that's why it goes back to the day I signed that contract with my dad was both the strangest day of my life and the day I finally didn't feel a pressure on my shoulders.
Yeah. Entirely fucking surreal when it feels, when you've entered into something, when people are going, what? And it is literally like, you're going, I'm going to bring democracy to North Korea. And it's like, it's literally like people going, well, that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
That's never going to happen.
For me, it's all the underdogs. That's always been my family motto. Those kids that don't feel accepted or feel like they're a little bit weird or a little bit kooky.
Yeah.
I'm here to say that's all right. I mean, for God's sake, look at my outfit. Look at who I am as a person. I'm not afraid to be weird because being weird isn't something that's wrong or something that should be shunned down. Being weird is a bloody superpower because guess what? As much as they're going to go do their corporate jobs or they're going to go become this, that, and the other, believe me, you could create something that could change the bloody world and you don't even know it. The creative genius of ADHD.
Such a hormonal mess. Like, it's so fucking true, because when someone turns around and goes, how many downloads is it getting? How many, whatever. And it's like, I don't fucking, when you get a message saying that I heard something that really helped me today, that's stopped me from doing something. That means so much more than anything.
A thousand people could buy the music. Everyone could share it and like and everything. But as long as it helps at least one person feel a bit better about themselves or understand that what they're doing is all right. You know, you're doing all right. Life treats people so difficult. And I feel like music is the soundtrack to everyone's lives. I feel like, you know, that scene when the two lovers kiss isn't as good when it doesn't have some heartfelt ballad underneath. Yeah. I feel like music is the soundtrack of our lives. And there are certain aspects of our lives that aren't soundtracked, aka ADHD.
ADHD.
Definitely should check that out.
ADHD.
But it's those, for me, it's about creating those songs. Like when I was a kid and I was writing, I used to write ballads and heartbreak songs because I had so many terrible relationships as a kid.
Mm.
And bear in mind, like 15, 16 years old, and it was abusive relationships.
Yeah.
And I got told, oh, boys only hit you because they like you. Oh, you're too young to understand. Like, you're too young. You'll understand this when you're older. And I got so sick of being told that, oh, you'll understand when you're older. I know your relationship can't be like this because you're a kid.
Mm.
That I spent so long writing about every single instance of heartbreak. The first song I wrote on piano was about a woman's perspective of divorce from an abusive relationship. I tried to write every aspect of heartbreak into a song so that there was something for everyone. My friends started coming to me with their breakups and said, can you write a song that's going to help me get through this? I write a song for them. And it didn't just become therapy for me. It became something for them.
Yeah.
It became something, okay, well, here's a song and here's the healing element for you, you know? And for me, the music is about healing. Music is about that moment where you can breathe and just take a moment to take everything in. And music is, like I said, the soundtrack to everyone's life, and it's the most important thing.
Mm.
I feel like half of my memories have a song behind them. Even with ADHD as well, people are saying, I've had a couple of people say to me, that's my anthem now. And that sits so deep in my heart.
Yeah.
Because for me to know that someone who's been through that same process that I have of questioning why they do these things and why am I like this, who has now heard ADHD and gone, oh my God, this is so true. I really, really, really am thankful for everyone who's messaged me about that, because just knowing that something like that, especially a song about finding yourself and being neurodivergent, which is so hard to go through, has helped someone, that's my job done.
It's a really nice segue into my next question, which is, we'd like to ask everyone the things about themselves, because it's a question we don't often get asked. But what are the things about you that you genuinely love and cherish?
Do you know, that's such a difficult question, because I spent so many years hating myself.
I know, it's the worst, isn't it?
What's something I like about myself? My eyes.
Because I was literally just, I was like, I can't stop looking at them.
So I've got a very different type of eye. So you know how you can see your inner corner comes into your eye, like you've got that space. I don't, and for so many years, I hated my eyes. I thought, why are my eyes so, why are they small? Why can't I do like cut crease? Why can't I do this with my eyes? And I got so annoyed that I didn't have those perfect cat eye eyes. And do you know what? The day I started loving my eyes was the first time my partner turned around to me and said, you have got the most amazing eyes I've ever seen. And I stood in the mirror and I think I stood there looking at myself and I was thinking, how can he say that? How can he? And it was a long process, but my boyfriend tells me every day, he looks me in the eyes and he tells me I'm beautiful every day. And for me, I found so much loving in the blue in my eyes, because it's the blue in my granddad's eyes. It's the blue in my family's eyes. I have my dad's eyes, funnily enough. And do you know when you do like, oh, I'm so much like my mother.
Yeah.
A lot of people go, oh my God, I sound like my mother. Oh my God, I sound like my dad. I'm like, oh my God, I sound like my mum. I'm never sad about that.
Mm.
But I think it's my eyes, my body.
Love
okay,
it.
The reason I say that is, like I said, years and years of body dysmorphia, years and years of absolutely hating myself, but I am who I am. I'm not going to change, and I don't care what anyone else said, because I've got someone back home that when I come home, they think I'm the most beautiful person ever. So that taught me to love myself on another level, and why I'm now wearing dresses and being able to go out in skirts without being terrified of people looking at my legs.
Mm.
Being comfortable in your own skin is something that's so hard to do, but I'm not scared to wear those clothes anymore, because the fashion sense I wanted required me learning to love myself in order for me to strive to what I want to look like.
Mm-hmm.
I am a bigger girl. And guess what? I will eat that burger in front of you and I will take an extra fries. What are you going to do about it?
Honestly. And who Seriously. Is it hurting?
All right.
Absolutely.
I enjoy a burger. One. I enjoy fries. I enjoy food, okay? Yeah. Food is delicious, right? But do I care about if somebody comes up to me and says, you need to be a bit thinner, or you could go down a size a bit? No, you can, Karen. How about you stop trying to strive for going to Weight Watchers every fucking 10 days? All right? You're buying expensive food for no reason. Just eat burger.
Get out of that Whole
sounds,
Foods.
I mean, that does sound bad because there's obviously people that struggle with that. But for the people that go, you need to be a little bit thinner, or oh, you're a little bit on the curvy side. Mm. I know. And my boyfriend loves it. Feel that.
Is there anything coming up that you can talk about?
I can indeed. I mean, I've got a single release coming up. And funnily enough, it's about Adam. It's a song called Make Me Your Mrs. And I'm so in love with my partner that I am dreaming about the day he asks me to marry him. And you know, everyone has that off moment. But I wrote this song and it's half funk. And then the other half is what I can only describe as like an audible representation of my love for him. Mm. It's got wedding bells in it as well, you know, big fat hint. But yeah, the song's about basically, if you don't get down on one knee and ask me, in all due time, in your own time, I'm going to do it myself. Because why should it be socially acceptable for just the man to do it? Like, I mean, it's the 29th of February is a day that it is classed, and I'm going to do this, socially acceptable.
Oh, I forgot this.
For a woman to propose. Now, I want to release the song on that date because I feel like, A, that's a very hypocritical thing because a woman should be allowed to propose without any kind of questioning or norms. But I want to do it on that day because I would genuinely get down on one knee and ask this guy to marry me like that. Mm. However, he has told me he wants to do it. But it's a song about my love for Adam and just every day. There's not been a day he hasn't made me laugh and there's not been a day he hasn't made me feel like I'm the only girl in the world. The day I met him, and I've said this, was one of the best days of my life because I wouldn't be here without him. Yeah. I would not be on this planet.
Yeah.
You are the best thing that ever happened to me.
That's wonderful. That's beyond wonderful. Also, I know I have two female friends who have proposed to their partners.
I think the idea of a woman proposing is so special because yes, a man could do it and yes, it would be amazing. But a woman with love so deep for a man and so much trust to, and for the man to go, yeah, okay, like this is fine. It just is so happy. But yeah, that's what the song's about. There's loads coming up. Obviously, festival season is coming up very fast. I cannot believe how far we're into the year already. That's so weird.
Mm.
But there's obviously festivals coming up. I can't quite name yet. But other than that, it's going to be a whirlwind of a year and hopefully some cracking new music coming out and some personal music. I forgot one very crucial piece of information that, oh my God, this is ADHD, this is.
Yeah.
I have a headline show coming up. Amazing. On the 27th of February, it will be at Colours in Hoxton. Tickets are on sale right now on my Instagram and on also all my social medias. If you want to come hear some banging tunes, me make a dick of myself on stage for a couple of hours, come down and check it out. Come to the show. It's going to be all pink. It's going to be like you're in the womb again. Ready?
But yes. Oh, God, I'm back.
Oh, no. But yeah, 27th of February in Colours in Hoxton. Check out tickets. They're on sale. Come and see me live and come and have a good time.
Come have a laugh. Come have fill the room with love.
Listen to me make a fool of myself for a couple of hours.
I'm going to link everything down below. So please visit the podcast bio where you will find links to tickets. But that just leaves me to say thank you so much for taking the time to come to London and meet my cat and sit and talk.
You do realise that there is definitely not going to be a lump in my jacket later. Just ignore that. And leave the door. I'm such a cat lover, but thank you for having me. Honestly, to sit, it's so refreshing. Like, I feel like I can go about my day and it almost feels quite weightless.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, you are so amazing to talk to. So I feel like I could tell you anything.
That is what a lot of people say. My boyfriend keeps being like, you've got to stop being, because people tell you everything. And I was like, I know.
You're a very good listener. Like, I mean... brilliant idea to have a podcast, bloody.
Oh, thank you so, so much. Thank you. And thank you, everybody who's come and made today possible. Really just amazing. And all the love, and that's it.
And to yourself as well.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.